Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
And I went to the casting and I look around pre-COVID and everyone is like high heels, little mini skirts and a top, like a little, you know, like going out top. And I'm sitting in my tennis shoes and my like neon shorts and my turquoise sports bra going, I mean, it must be a different character. So I come in there and the whole scene is like, I completely misunderstood it.
Hello, world, and welcome back to another episode of Thanks for Coming In. I'm your host, Jillian Clare. If this is your first time tuning in, this is the show where I speak to fellow actors about their journey in the industry, and I make them share some awkward or embarrassing audition stories. If you're not yet subscribed to the show, make sure to hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening to right now. You can also leave us some love in the form of rates, reviews, stars, whatever it is that you see on that screen there. Today on the show, we have Nina Berkman. You may know her from Doom Annihilation, Hell Hath No Fury, The Car, Road to Revenge. She has a brand new movie called Cold Meat. She's a very impressive woman, and what a fantastic story. I'm very excited to share our conversation. So here's my talk with Nina. And welcome to the show, Nina!
Hi.
Very excited to have you on the show today. It's lovely to meet you.
So nice to meet you too. Yeah, I'm excited to be on.
This has been a really fun adventure for me recording podcasts and learning about my fellow actors throughout these years. So it's really cool and I'm excited to have you. I have a very specific film that I cannot wait to talk to you about. but before I get to that, the first thing I love to ask my guests is, what made you want to be an actor?
Well, I never made the choice. It's just I just always knew. I always knew I was going to be a performer. I just always knew it since I was 4 years old. Like that magical, my grandmother was a performer. She was a singer. My grandfather played in Ivan the Terrible and worked with Chekhov and some of the greatest, you know, Russian talents. And I just got exposed to it at a very young age. And my dad was a professor at the Danish Film School. So it was just something magical about it, you know, the world you could disappear in and the world where on stage you're loved. It was just, I just always knew this is, I don't know. I guess for me, it chose me. I didn't choose it. I think if I could do anything else, I would for sure be doing that. I don't have any other talents.
I fully understand that.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like your family was very much so entrenched in the business too. Did your parents want you to pursue acting, or were they more like, oh, Lord, I don't know if you want to follow my footsteps?
No, you know, because my parents are not actors. My dad is a professor. So for him, education is key. You know, and my mom is a brainer, you know, she's one of those super brains who reads a book every day. So they never wanted me to get into it because my dad wanted me to have a real profession, you know, but they never, you know, they were very encouraging with whatever I did. I mean, I created my first TV show when I was 7. That was pretty, interesting. You know, 7 years old. I choreographed it. I wrote the whole thing. I did my lookbook. I had like storyboarded it.
My
dad just was always like, he just let me do whatever I wanted to do. You know, I was one of those kids that would go, we have a walking street in Denmark, and I would just go perform like, you know, with my girlfriend, I would choreograph like this like super cool dance to like CNC Music Factory or something, and my dad would go and support us. Like, I was just always performing and he was always supporting me.
That's so amazing. I love that so much.
Yeah. So yeah.
What was your journey? So you're from Denmark. So yes. what was your journey like? Did you go to university before coming to the States? How did you navigate getting into the entertainment industry?
Well, I went to the Royal Danish Ballet when I was like seven, I think six or seven, and then I got kicked out because I was too clumsy, and they told me I shouldn't be a ballerina, and then. I went to the Danish singing school to try to get in. They told me I was tone deaf. The acting school, I couldn't get in. And then I was like, after they kicked me out at the Royal Danish Ballet, I decided I was going to be a ballerina. And then I got a scholarship to school in England. And then I went to the Bolshoi Theater when I was, you know, 15. And then I became a ballerina from one of the most prestigious schools. And then I came to New York when I was 16. Because I was a high school dropout, you know, never finished my regular school. And I knew enough to know that acting was a craft. So if I really wanted to learn it, I had to go to school to be taken seriously. Because I really wanted to be taken seriously. And from the ballet world, I understood how important it was to perfect your craft and go to school and learn.
Wow.
So that was my journey.
That's amazing. So you came to New York at 16.
Yes.
And you immediately got into learning the craft of acting.
Yes. You know, I was flailing around. I didn't know anyone. Right. My parents weren't supporting me. I, you know, had to make money. I, you know, worked as a dishwasher. I didn't have my papers. I was there illegally. I had no money. And then I started doing random gigs. And then I became, you know, an amateur boxer and started making money, you know. As a cocktail waitress in Backgammon Club, did my fighting, did my modeling, did my things, had to take my GET, my SATs, and then finally got into NYU, you know? So it wasn't an easy journey.
That is so badass.
So I just knew I had I just knew in my gut that for me, at least, I needed to go to school because I had a very thick accent and nobody, you know, you're so young. Nobody took me seriously. And I really wanted to do it. And I didn't know what exactly. I just knew I wanted to perform. And I knew that dance was not expressive enough to, you know, it was limited when it came to expressions. You know, so I went to musical theater school, actually. That's how I started.
Wow. Okay. I feel like you need to write your life story into a mini series or something, because just that, just like your teenage years all the way up to like NYU, I would watch 100%.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, when it's your own life, it's always like, whatever, you know, I didn't have a choice, you know, looking back, you know, I mean, I don't recommend it to anyone, and I have two little sisters and I will never let them do what I did. And it wasn't very safe or easy, but, you know, I mean, at least when I was that age, I was like, I felt like I was an adult and I had no fear. You know, I wasn't going to go back to Denmark.
You just decided to do it and you did it.
I was just excited. I was, you know, New York City. Awesome. By myself, freedom, you know what I mean? It was just freedom. And I realized very fast that, you know, that's why I fell in love with America, because it's like, if you're good, you'll get a chance. You know, we're in Denmark.
Yeah.
I was really good. And there's just one school. And if you don't get in, you know, then that's that. Where, you know, here, you know, if you keep at it, eventually, and you're good and you work hard, you would get some sort of shot somewhere. So, So that was very encouraging for me.
So you go to NYU.
Yes.
You experience this. And then what was like the first, do you remember the first professional acting job that you booked that you were like, oh man, I was right. Ha ha. Look at me go.
No, I never. I mean, I did lots of plays when I was in New York. You know, I never felt like I never felt that with the acting. You know, I felt it with the ballet because I got into the best school in the world, and I was like, oh yeah, yeah. But with acting, it was, I just loved the craft, and I, you know, it was a very slow. I did a play, and then I got like an under five at All My Children. As a French something, and then they had me back as a German nurse. Then, you know, and then meanwhile I was making money. You know, NYU was $30,000 at the time per semester that I had to make. So it was, you know, I was constantly, you know, burned out, completely burned out, trying to go to school and work and audition at the same time. So I finally just came over here to LA and started working. I couldn't keep it up. I couldn't finish 4 years. I couldn't do it. I just had to start working. So for me, it was never like that. I did sometimes get fed up with the acting, and I did feel very restricted when I came to Los Angeles. I started booking a lot, but it was a lot of like TV, cheesy TV hosting, you know, 1 year booked 24 commercials. You know, so I would just say yes to everything, but it wasn't what I really wanted to do. So then I would write music, and I would go and sing with my band, and I would write all my own music, get it all out on the road, and then I would come back and go another round. And so I did that for a few years until it was like, I got my record deal. I lived out my dream as a musician. And then I was like, well, if I really got to commit, I can't do both. I have to I can't be gone for 3 to 6 months on the road. So I had to like choose if I really wanted to do it. So that's what happened.
Speaking of singing, this brings me to the movie that I am very excited to talk to you about, which is Repo: The Genetic Opera. You don't understand what large effect that movie had on my teenage years. Like, my friends and I were obsessed with that movie. We would consistently just like out of nowhere be like, Cydrate comes in a little glass vial. Like, out of nowhere. It just was like the movie of my friend group. So I have to know all about filming that.
That is hilarious. Well, I it's so long ago. Like, I just came and Patrick Swayze was cast as the main guy in the movie. And then I can't remember, he was sick or something. He wasn't doing well. He somehow pulled out, and then they needed another name. And then the part that I was supposed to play, I was replaced by Paris Hilton.
Oh my God.
Yes. And all of the singing is actually, a lot of the singing is me singing, and they like blended our voice together. I worked with this guy named Yoshiki from X Japan who did all of the music. So it was one of those bittersweet, because it was one of those you were talking about. Yes, I booked it. And then they needed a name. And then I was replaced with Paris Hilton. And then I remember they used my singing because she couldn't sing. I have a 3-octave range and I'm operatically trained, you know. So yeah, it was one of those. It was one of those painful ones. So I'm in it because I'm singing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wasn't in it. I can't remember if I ended up
playing.
Yeah, I think I ended up playing something. Yeah, it was a very painful experience into the industry.
Wow. Oh my gosh. I feel like I just got the inside scoop on that movie. I'm so excited.
You totally did.
That's horrible. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's it. That's the industry. And then I would remember that's when I went with my band, and I was like, oh yeah, that's right. You know, and then I'd just go and sing my own music and scream. And then I ended up getting my record deal, you know, because I love the craft of acting, but the industry was kind of rough on me because my skin wasn't as thick as it is now, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, now I don't care. You know, if I don't get this one, I'll get the next one. You know, I just don't care anymore. Where back then it was like, I thought I was going to die, you know, because when you first start out, you think this is it. Mm-hmm. This is it. You know, like the first big thing was, I think with John Malkovich, I booked something with John Malkovich. I was the lead. We shot in Switzerland. We shot all over. And I was like, this is it. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's like, you know, when I'm learning in this industry, there is no there, because then there's the next one and the next one and the next one. And, you know.
Yeah. You just never know, like, what's going to be the one that hits, you know? It can be the most random things in the world that all of a sudden people are like, wow, we love this. And, you know, ones that you've – because that's happened to me where it's like I've done films where I'm like, this is it. This is going to put me on the map. I know it. And then it comes out and you're like, that's it? That's it? Nothing?
Yeah.
People aren't calling me yet? I don't understand.
We're going to take a quick commercial break and then we'll be right back.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
And back to the show. So let's talk a little bit about Doom Annihilation and what that was like to film, because it seems like such a wild experience.
Yeah, it was fun. It was Universal Pictures, mm-hmm. So I was in Bulgaria, and I shot another Universal movie not too long before that called The Car. So I was familiar with Bulgaria, knew a lot of the stunt team, you know, over mm-hmm. there. It was a lot of fun because it was with monsters, you know, and they have a great team over there with that would, you know, help us prep, and we will do all the previses and rehearse, I spent so much time in Bulgaria, I started falling in love with it because I just spent 3 months prior to that, and then I came, and it's an ensemble cast. So it's always fun because then you can breathe, because you're just a part of the cast, you know, you're not carrying the movie. So it was fun. And Tony Giglio, the director, he was great. It was a very fun experience. And you know, it's a video game, so I seem to be attracting those. those video games.
Hey, video games are great. So
yeah.
I think the more of that, the better. I think that, I don't know, video games to me are like such an interesting medium and so cool to see how they're using actors now and really giving, yeah. you know, such life to them. It's just so fun to watch.
Yeah. But they're great characters, some of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean,
Call of Duty, she's, you know, Battery in Call of Duty. She is. Yeah. She's cool. I mean, she's an amazing character. They should make a movie about her.
Agreed. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Well, it's like The Last of Us. The Last of Us is like, I think one of the best TV series to come out in recent years. And the video game is so good.
Yeah.
And then they were able to just build such a fantastic world in the TV series based off of the video game. And cool shit. Yeah. on the show, I like to ask actors to share audition stories of things that may have gone wrong in the room or funny moments. Do you have any stories like that?
Well, I have. I mean, you know, like the Doom audition, I remember I did a self-tape. And they're always like, you know, you can't eat at a self-tape. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay, if I'm going to eat, I'm just going to eat the whole scene. And I'm just going to constantly be chowing down and chewing and like talking with my mouth full just to kind of, I was kind of doing an experiment and I booked it. So you can do whatever you want at the audition. No, but I had one that was like excruciating. The scene I was auditioning for, it was like you had to wear like shorts and a little sports bra, so like a fitness thing, like running shoes or something, like something you work out in. And I went to the casting and I look around pre-COVID and everyone is like high heels, little mini skirts and a top, like a little, you know, like going out. Top, and I'm sitting in my tennis shoes and my like neon shorts and my turquoise sports bra going, I mean, it must be a different character. So I come in there and the whole scene is like, I completely misunderstood it. We're like in a club. I'm like in there, you know. I mean, it was a complete disaster, you know. And again, you know, I booked it. Like every time I feel like I've booked those parts, I was always like completely wrongly dressed, you know, like same thing. I wore yoga clothes. I was supposed to wear high heels to another thing and I was wearing flip-flops, so I just did the whole audition in bare feet. So it's like I always feel like the auditions I do best at is the ones that kind of throw me, that takes me for a loop, because sometimes I have a tendency to over prepare, I think. I miss auditioning in person. I like auditioning in person.
Me too. I'm an in-person audition person.
It just
feels better. I like having the experience with people. But I also like, you know, mistakes like that, because I feel like then you just automatically stand out in their mind too. Like, you remember that girl who like didn't wear heels even when we told everybody to wear heels? I think we like her. Like, you know, I think it helps create that personal connection. Self-tapes feel so, I don't know, rigid and just not connected.
I miss that. I mean, my favorite is just direct bookings, you know, from New York. Yeah, so you don't have to audition. But sometimes I think it's fun.
Well, let's talk about your new movie that just came out, Cold Meat, with Alan Leach. Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, it's, you know, it's so much fun because it's like a play. It feels like a play that's inside a movie. That was my first attraction to the project. And, you know, no audition. It was, you know, direct offer, which is always great. And then it was just such a great character because she's so different from what I used to play. You know, I normally play the more like the badass, the video games, the sexy, the something. And Anna is just a normal girl. You know, a beaten down waitress who has an abusive ex-husband, soon to be ex-husband, and she lives with her mom. she says, you know, she's a single mom with a daughter, and, you know, she's just a regular girl who's struggling.
Mm.
So, yeah, it was very interesting to live in her shoes.
Yeah.
Yes. But she finds her strength. Anna is not a pusher. You know, she finds her strength. I just want the audience to know.
What's, yeah. So it's different than the normal roles that you are asked to play.
Yes.
Did you find yourself preparing for the project in a different way as well?
Well, I always, you know, try to, you know, I'm all about preparation. Like, that's my favorite part of the whole process is the preparation. So, you know, I try to prepare as much. And Ellen Leach's character is based after two real characters, actually, that did exist, that are real. So I found those two characters and I did all the research I could. And then on the girls, that was part of this whole true story. And then I had to do a lot of digging because I'm... where I'm at now in my life, I'm very far from Anna. So I had to kind of go back to who I used to be. You know, I know what it's like to be with someone abusive. I know what it's like to have shitty jobs and be a cocktail waitress. I know what it's like to, you know, struggle like that and feel like you don't have a choice in a small town and feeling trapped and all of that stuff. Yeah. So I did a lot of character work because she talks, she sits different, she stands different. Yeah, everything is different, and then she transforms throughout the movie, but it's very, very, very subtle. So it was a tough one because she's so subtle. I'm a lot more dramatic and a lot more like physical, and she's not. She's very subtle. Yeah.
So sounds like it must have been a very like rewarding experience though, being able to strip yourself and really figure out who this character was.
Yeah, I mean, it was rewarding. I'm thinking about, I don't know if I felt rewarded. I felt, you know, to go to the places and live where she lived, you know, it wasn't very fun to go there because I worked so hard to get away from who she is.
Mm.
But I think what was rewarding was to bring her to life and have a really good co-star. You know, Ellen was a really great co-star, and we had a great director who, like throughout the movie, would let us kind of take the steering wheel. He's had that project for 10 years, so he had a very rigid idea of what he wanted. He saw every shot, he saw every character. And as we started working on it, he was like, whoa, that's, you know, because he had it in his mind for 10 years. And as we started working, he kind of would let us do our thing more and more and more so we could, you know, bring, you know, whatever it was we had prepared and how we saw them. So, no, it was a lot of fun. It was like being back in, it felt like we were doing a play, or we were rehearsing a lot. We were doing long scenes, very long takes. So it felt like, I felt like I was doing a play again. And you know, that's the fun part. Like you get to play and try out things and be creative, and instead of hit your mark and say your line, you know, we got to go there. And everyone wanted to go there. And the guy who plays my husband really went there too. Yeah, he was very scary.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I mean, he's a sweetheart in real life. But I'm like, whoa. Yeah.
You're like, damn.
Yeah. No, it was interesting because, you know, it's a very interesting experience.
Yeah. Well, and the movie's out now on demand and in select theaters. What's next for you? Do you have anything on the docket?
Yeah, I have a movie coming out. I think it's May 26th with Aaron Eckhart, you know, and another fantastic actor that Jesse V. Johnson did. I worked with Jesse in Hell Hath No Fury, where I play a French resistance fighter. So that's like a fun action movie. And I actually play a very different character. Very, very different character. I'm not the lead in it, but it's a great part. And so that one is coming out. And then I have two projects for sure that I'm doing this year. They haven't announced them yet. I was hoping it would be announced by now, but it's not.
That's okay, because now I'll just tell people that they have to follow you on social media to keep up, right?
Yeah, they have to follow me on social media. All I can say is that a lot to do with motorcycles. There's lots of because I ride, you know, ride motorcycles and race, so.
Oh, yeah. Very fun.
So it's a fun one. That one is a fun one, yeah. The next one that I'm working on, yeah. Social media, they need to,
What is your social media so that people can keep up?
Nina Bergman. Instagram is the best way to follow me. I have a website, ninabergman.com, but the best is Instagram. You know, I have Twitter too, Facebook. I don't dance on TikTok, not yet. So I'm
not. Not yet, though.
Not yet. No, Instagram. Yeah.
Love it. Well, I'm very excited for all the stuff that you have coming out, and it's been such a joy talking to you. So thank you so much for stopping by the show today.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was fun.
Thanks again to Nina. Make sure to check out Cold Meat in theaters and on demand now. Tune in 2 weeks for another brand new episode. And as always, thanks for coming in.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.